Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Akron, Ohio, and began coaching football at age 19. He was the head coach at University of Connecticut, the Naval Academy, and the Detroit Lions. He then became a TV color analyst for college football for 12 years, and for the last 28 years has owned and run a manufacturer's rep business. He has written at least one handwritten thank you letter each day since 1955. His name, Rick Forzano, the coach. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Rick Forzano, the head coach of the Detroit Lions from 74 to 76. Coach, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Jack, it's my pleasure. Very much so. It's an honor for me to be on your program. You know, you're one of my heroes, so that's all right.
Here we start. Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Well, my parents were from the old country. My mom was from Germany. My dad was from Italy, from Sicily. And they had third grade education, but they were dumb like foxes. They gave us great advice, and most of all, they brought us up in a Christian atmosphere, and we've tried to practice that all of our lives.
What did your dad do?
My dad was a tailor and dry cleaner. Yep. And he was really good. Matter of fact, some people wouldn't let anybody else touch their suits or make a suit for them. But my dad, Andy, they called him Andy Forzano, and he was just a great guy and a hard worker. And my mom worked right beside him in the tailor shop, sewing and cleaning the shop and doing things like that.
You got into coaching at age 19. How?
Well, I was partially blinded playing football in Akron, Ohio. It was called Bantam football in 1943, and that ended my aspirations to be a football player, but quite frankly, it wasn't the end of a budding career. I wasn't that good at all. As I tell people, I was small, and I made up for it by being slow. But I started because when I went to college after serving in the Marine Corps, I decided that, hey, I want to be a football coach. And everybody was trying to discourage me, but my high school coach, who I never played for, by the way, but he knew me in high school, and also Trevor East, the head coach at Kent State, and Paul Brown, head of the Browns, said, if you want to be a coach, go be a coach. And so while I was in college, I was a gopher at Garfield High School. I did everything, and I finally went from cleaning up the locker room to becoming an assistant freshman coach, then a JV coach, and then assistant varsity coach. So I had, when I graduated from college, I had 4 years of coaching experience.
You have coached with and for many of the greatest legends. Let's throw out a couple.
Well, Paul Brown, of course, was my mentor, and I still think to this day that he contributed more to professional football than anybody, and he started looking after me when I was a high school football coach. Then, fortunately, I coached for a guy named Trev Reese, who people didn't know, but he was at Kent State, and Trev had one of the great records in the Mid-American Conference, and he, too, was a great coach. And Phil Shipe at the College of Worcester was just super, and he's the one that got, he used to make us take 10 pieces of stationery with us on the road. And when we met somebody for the first time, we had to write a handwritten thank you note. And from that point on, I thought that was a pretty good idea, and I've kind of stayed with it. But, you know, I've had many. Bill Walsh and I coached the Bengals together. And, you know, Bill, he was successful because, like Lou Holtz and Billy Belichick, they did the opposite of what I did as a coach, so they were successful. But they're great coaches.
You played high school basketball with Bo? and Ara Parsegian. Can you talk about them?
Well, that was a great time. That was we played for Thornton Taylors. It was an amateur team. This after we came back from the service, and I was tell people I was the 13th man on a 12-man squad. But we had a great time together, a lot of laughs, and I have admired Bo Schembecker and Ara Parsegian. I think they're two of the greatest college football coaches that ever lived.
Bo recently passed, and the outpouring of love here was phenomenal. Why?
Because Bo Schembecker was a special individual. What you see is what you get from Bo, and he was honest, he was forthright. He was not only a great coach, but his players loved him, actually loved him. Woody Hayes was the same way, who was Bo's mentor. They had a way, they were tough, tougher than the son of a gun on their players. But their players loved him, and people loved him, and they respected him, because I still think people respect discipline, and that's what Bo was, a great disciplinarian and a great teacher.
You gave Lou Holtz his first college coaching opportunity. Can you talk about Holtz?
Well, Lou was a football player at Kent State when I coached there. And in Lou's mind, Lou was a better football player than the coaches ever thought. But when he got hurt and couldn't play in his senior year, we kind of made him a gopher coach and sent him out to scout and everything. It was amazing. He came back with scouting reports that were much better than guys that have been coaching for 10 years. And so when I went to the University of Connecticut, I took him with me, and Lou was just destined to be a great head football coach. And just a sidelight, the reason he didn't get the Connecticut head job, I recommended him when I left. They said he didn't look like a coach. And I said, well, he is a coach, and he will go to the big time one of these days, and he has.
You were coaching at Naval Academy. And there was a young kid who was the son of an assistant named Billy. And you hired him to be a water boy. What did you pay him, and can you talk about him?
Well, Billy, he was breaking film down for me at 10 years of age at the Naval Academy, and I was the defensive coach. And Billy could sit there, and we just put him in a room and say, break down the opponent's film. And at 10, he gave us a great report on the opponents. And he was always around football, and his dad was a football great, as far as I'm concerned. Could have been a head coach, didn't want to be a head coach. And then when I came to Detroit, I brought Billy along as a gopher coach. And the next thing you know, he was coaching tight ends, and he was coaching special teams. And from then on, he was on a fast track. A brilliant guy. I'd hate to think what his IQ is, somewhere around 175, 180. And if you'll notice on the sideline, he never takes notes. You never see him, but he's got it all in his head. He's just a great football coach.
Rick's been talking about Bill Belichick. And when we come back, we'll ask him what makes a great coach. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Coach Rick Forzano. Rick, what makes a great coach?
Well, number one, I can't honestly tell you what makes a great coach. You know, you've heard people say somebody has it, and no one can describe what it is. But I think he's a complete individual. I must say this, and I feel that a coach can do just many things. He's a teacher. He's got to be a teacher first. And then he's got to be able to get along with people next. Then he has to be a disciplinarian. Then he has to be organized. And then he can't wear a watch, because there is no timetable when you coach. You don't even know what time it is. Matter of fact, I always went right through lunch. My coaches used to call me a camel, because I just, you know, you get involved in football and you forget things, which isn't right, don't get me wrong. And my family suffered, too, and most families do. And that's why I have such a great wife of 52 years, because she brought our kids up. I hate to tell you that, but she did. But she knew I wasn't out fooling around. She knew that I was in love with a projector, and that I loved football, and I was trying to make a living for my family. And to answer your question, I just think it's, if you take the top executive, you take a Rick Wagner, a GM, he has it. You know, he's going through hell, but you know what? When times are bad, that's where the guy that has it makes it. And the coaches, Billy Belichick, Bill Walsh, Lou Holtz, they have it, no question about it.
Who's the best coach you ever saw?
Well, you know, I'm going to be partial again. I'm going to say Paul Brown. I worked with him and I saw him operate. He was so organized, and he could evaluate players and just had the feel of what was going on in a game or on personnel, just running a whole organization. He just was special, no question about it.
Who's your all-time favorite player that you ever coached?
Well, Roger Staubach stands out above the rest, in my opinion. I had the good fortune to coach a lot of great football players. Roger never has changed. I started recruiting him as a junior in high school from Cincinnati Purcell High School, and was able to somehow or other convince him to come to the Naval Academy. He went a year to prep school with us. He could have signed a big bonus to play professional baseball. He was a great pitcher. He set every record in football, baseball, and basketball at New Mexico military. And he came to the Naval Academy, and I will tell you one thing. I sent him a telegram and said, you will win the Heisman Trophy if you come to the Naval Academy, and we will name a battleship after you. Well, he's still looking for the battleship.
So, who's the best player you ever saw?
Well, this will blow your mind probably, but total player, running back, I thought was Barry Sanders. Barry Sanders, the reason I say that about Barry is he could make good people miss. Now, you know, when you mention great players I ever saw, you look at Joe Schmidt, you look at Gale Sayers, you look at Johnny Unitas. I mean, there's a lot of great ones there. And actually, I'm not smart enough to tell you who the greatest, but I just admired Barry every time he put his hands on the ball, because you didn't know where he was going, and neither did the defense.
Can you tell us about the first time you took the Naval Academy to Notre Dame?
Well, that's a tough place to play, as you know, because as I tell people, there's 65,000 against you, and then you look up and there's touchdown Jesus, you know, and as I tell people, that's a tough place to play. And of course, what's great about it, it's a great place to watch a game, the stands are so close to the football field and to the football players, you know, it's just great. But there's so much tradition there, and you know, they reincarnate Newt Rockne every Friday, and how are you supposed to, you know, beat that? And they talk about the luck of the Irish. Gee whiz, I mean, they have it. It's just, but they're also good, which helps, and they're also big. You know, I used to tell our guys, remember this, the bigger they are, the harder they hit. You know, so.
Can you talk about the end of the game with Monty Stickles?
Well, Monty Stickles, we were playing them, I believe it was 1959, and he goes back to kick a 43-yard field goal, I believe it was, and into the wind. And I said, man, this guy can't hit this thing. And as I tell people, which is a little embellished, I tell them that Monty made the sign of the cross, Monty Stickles, and I thought that was nice, very nice. But when the referee did it, I knew we were dead.
you had hundreds, thousands of players. Some you hugged, some you praised, some you screamed at, some you challenged. How did you figure out which to do with which?
Well, I can't tell you that I did it right with all of them, but you really do try to, and your point is well taken. I think there's some people that you have to really get on. You know, two guys that always stick out in my mind are Dexter Bussey and Horace King that played for us here in Detroit. These two people, I'm going to tell you something, they never made many mistakes, but when they did, they never said anything. The only thing they ever did was grab their face mask and shake it, and they were giving me a message that they didn't like what I said to them, but that was the most back talk they ever gave. Now, other guys, you know, you get on them a little bit and then they get upset. And some guys you have to get on to get them riled up to play the game, because football's a tough game. You know, it's a lot of hitting. People say, oh, those guys are just kind of leaning on each other out there. Let me tell you, if you ever get on the sidelines, feel the thuds and hear the thuds, you'll know that they are going after each other.
When we come back, we'll ask the coach what football taught him about life. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Rick Forzano, and since 1978, Rick has owned and run a manufacturer's rep business entitled Rick Forzano Associates. Rick, what has football taught you about life?
Well, it's taught me a lot of things about life. I think the biggest thing you learn from football is that you're going to get knocked on your butt and you got to get back up. And people that haven't been knocked down are the ones that usually collapse in those situations. And most coaches somewhere along the way have been knocked down. You look at Eric Parsegian, was 0-9 at Northwestern, and look what happens to him later on. I mean, you learn from those situations, and that's what I love as much as anything, that I see young people play this game. I watch my grandsons play it, and they get knocked down. They got to get back up. And many a young man from the Naval Academy has written me and called me, Jack, when they served in Vietnam and Korea and these different places and got shot down, had time in the jungle by themselves, trying to get out, trying to escape. And they said, Coach, the things that I learned on the football field, the pride, the sacrifice, that you just got to keep going. And like your program says, nothing is impossible. And that's what they come out with. And when you hear it from these people that have been right there fighting for their lives in a jungle, and they say what football did for them, that's better than somebody giving me $1 million.
What does the word team mean to you?
Well, team means working together in life. And, you know, I don't care if you're a family, the husband, the wife, they have to work together. The kids have to respect them together. The family has to work as a team. You take a football team at the goal line, and you got 11 against 11. And if one guy on offense, just one guy, doesn't carry out his assignment, the play breaks down, whether it's on offense or defense. So you must learn to play together and respect the other guy and forget about self. As Vince Lombardi called it, selflessness, that you must, you know, put yourself below anything else but the team. The team is the most important thing. And you see the teams that win today, and they're unselfish. And that's what I've always admired about Bo Schembechler era, but I admire about Lloyd Carr and what he can do, and Jim Tressel at Ohio State. They can make people play together and get them together as a family and make them play as a football team. Now, people will laugh at that, I'm sure, when they say, oh, you know. But that's, I think, is the problem why teams don't win, because there's too much selfishness amongst that football team.
We're talking to Coach Rick Forzano, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Coach Rick Forzano, who was also a TV color analyst for college football for 12 years. Can you tell the story when you're the head coach of the Detroit Lions and you go to speak at the Cadillac Assembly Plant?
Yes, I went down there because my next-door neighbor, Bill Knight, was, I believe, head of the PR department at Cadillac, and he asked me to go down to Clark Street and talk to the employees there and watch a car being made, which I'd never seen before. So I did, and then we started to go down to the assembly line, and I see a gentleman there, he's riveting or doing something. I said, gee whiz, I said, boy, that's a tough job. What do they pay a guy like that? And they said, with his fringes, about 45,000. I said, whoa, I'm making 50, and my highest paid assistant, I think, is making 22. I don't want them to hear about it because they're going down to Cadillac and apply for a job. But it was a real revelation, because in coaching, this is the true thing, you don't worry about the bunnies. Now, they make big monies today, no question about it. But the money's not what counts with coaches. Coaches have a feeling about coaching, and I'll guarantee you Lou Holtz, on half the head jobs he had, he never asked him what he was going to make. He took the job because you want it. And if the Detroit Lions job opened up today and they'd say, we're not going to pay anybody, you'd have 100 good football coaches, I feel, apply for that job.
You made $50,000.
Yep.
Mariucci, when they hired him, made $5 million.
Yep.
And I think your statement was, that's just two more zeros.
That's right. It's a good cost of living raise. But Mr. Ford, you know, was a generous guy to me. And to me, I hate to see it happening to Mr. Ford, because people say to me, Mr. Ford doesn't want to win. Mr. Ford wants to win in the worst way. There just seems to be something missing there. And I can't tell you what that is, Jack. If I'd had that answer, you know, I'd be a multimillionaire, I'm sure. But I think that money wasn't the main object. And I was, in my mind, I was making enough money. And my wife said to me, Rick, I'm going to the bank every 2 weeks. And so that was enough for us.
One of the toughest things a coach has to do is go and call a player in to tell them that he can't do it anymore. How did you do that, Rick?
That is the toughest thing to do, because nobody, you, anybody, does not believe at any time that they still can't handle the job. No question about it. And to tell somebody, especially a guy that's been in the league, say, 10 years, and you say to him, we're cutting you and you're out, you've just lost it and that, or, you know, you don't put it in those terms. You just say, as Paul Brown used to say, which I thought was pretty good, he'd call all the assistants in and this guy, and he was going to cut, and he'd say, son, I think you ought to go into your life's work. And, you know, that's a shock. But he had a way of doing that. But it was difficult. And it becomes that old saying, authority is not without hate. You get a lot of hate from people when you cut them, no question about it.
What gets these aging stars through that transition?
Well, some of them worked in the off season. You take all those 1950 Detroit Lion football players, the Joe Schmitz, the Terry Bars, and they worked all time when they weren't playing football. So they had a career when they were through playing football. But today, you know, so many of these players, I think they're gonna play till 55 years of age or something, because they don't get these jobs and get themselves set in a career. Of course, some of them are making so much money that they don't have to, but still, that's a wasted life as far as I'm concerned.
Tomorrow, January 1st, 2007, New Year, an awful lot of people are facing a huge change, a transformation. What do you say to those people?
Well, I will only tell you, when I got knocked down and when I left the Lions, I was discouraged, disappointed, disillusioned, everything. But you know, God and my family and a few close friends got me through it. And what you have to do, you have to believe in yourself. And I still believe, you know, that there's a God, and he, if you go to him, he's going to help you if you deserve the help. You know, you just can't say, well, you know, help me and that's it. But friends also, the real friends, you know, I had many friends when I was coaching, but then when I left coaching, you'd have thought I had bubonic plague. You know, they kind of leave you. But That's what you have to do. I'll tell you, I feel for the people that have had buyouts, that have been told you're through. That is difficult. I'll tell you, any way you look at it. And I think people must have empathy for those people. But those people themselves have to say, I'm going to get it done, and I will. And I still believe if you make up your mind to something badly enough, you can get it done.
12 years, you're a TV college football analyst.
Yep.
Who were a few of the best announcers you ever heard?
Well, the number one guy, in my opinion, that I worked with was Bill Fleming. And Bill is pretty sick right now, by the way. And he knew TV from the satellite dish to the truck to everything. And he was a perfectionist. And every Monday when we get through doing a game, we'd go over to his house, and he would rip me to shreds, and he would rip himself to shreds about mistakes. But he used to say to me, Rick, if you want to be a real good announcer, listen to me. And I did, and I'm not saying I turned out to be real good, but I wasn't too bad, and he was great. Chris Schenkel was another great guy to work with. Jack, you don't understand the pressure those guys are on with a guy in his ear on an IFB talking to him while he's talking and asking him rhetorical questions. Just it's a tough job, and all hell breaks loose sometimes during a broadcast, and they just remain so calm. Keith Jackson, those people, you'd think that nothing had happened that even confused the broadcast.
Talk to us about Van Patrick.
Van Patrick was a great announcer and a great friend, and I used to sit with him on the trips that we made, and he loved Notre Dame, and he called himself the old announcer. I just thought he could announce a game better than just about anybody. And he was radio most of the time, and he could describe a game. You swear you were there, right there at the game. And I thought that Van was a great person, a great supporter of the Detroit Lions and Notre Dame, and I've missed him to this day.
For the last 28 years, you've run a manufacturer's rep business, Rick Forzano Associates. You're 78 years old. You look like you're 55 years old. You're in great shape. Why do you keep doing it?
Well, first of all, Jack, you got to get your eyes examined because I look more than 55, but thank you. But I just, number one, I enjoy it. I'm with my son in business, and we have another young man named Ryan Hilligan with us. But Rick, you know, being able to have business with your son is special. I get to see him almost every day. I tell people the first year he was going to kill me, the second year I was going to kill him, and now we get along, and he runs he's really the president of the business now. I'm just kind of hanging around. But I enjoy it. I've always enjoyed working, and my wife knows that they're going to have to carry me out.
You have phenomenal ethics and values. Talk about that.
Well, I think I said it earlier. My mother and dad taught us Christian principles, and I still believe it. Jack, I'll tell you right now, my wife and I, every day, we get up in the morning and we read some of the Bible. We say a prayer about maybe something that's needed, or, you know, just thanking God, and then we're out of there. And things like that gets you through the day. It gets me through the day because I need help. I really do. I have to have that strength. And to me, it helped me in football. I don't mean it helps you win games. I'm not saying that. But in business, the same way. And business to me is you treat, my dad always taught me, you're no better than anybody else, and they're no better than you are. And I've tried to live that way all my life, and I believe that. You know, I just feel I've been blessed, and we all have.
When we come back, we'll ask the coach about writing that handwritten note every day for the last 55 years. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with the coach, Rick Forzano. Rick, a couple questions. How do you write one handwritten letter a day, and who do you find to always write the letter to?
Well, everyone.
And why haven't you ever written one to me?
Yeah. Well, you get tired of them. No, it's something, as I said, that Phil Shipe, the head coach at the College of Worcester, was one of those people that had high ideals. And he said, and I was his only assistant football coach. There were just two of us coaching the team. And he said, now, Rick, when you go out recruiting or you run into somebody for the first time, get their card and just write them a handwritten note thanking them for the opportunity. And it's amazing how it's just something that I believe in. And I will say this in business, Jack, that people are going to think I'm crazy, but when I've lost a deal in the business world, I write the guy and thank him for giving me the opportunity. And I've written football players that we lost and thanked them for allowing me to recruit them. And when they got unhappy at a school, they called and said, you know, I'd like to come to the Naval Academy or to the University of Connecticut. And I didn't do it for that. I just think that those are the two toughest words for people to say. I don't know if it's a foreign language or what, to say thank you in this world. They just don't seem to want to do that. And I think it's brought on by the fact that their parents have not taught them to say thank you.
Every time I see you, you appear to be very upbeat. Are you picking the ponies, or how do you do that?
No, I'm not upbeat all the time. You know, anybody that says they're upbeat all the time, in my opinion, is lying. I tell people, you know, in the Bible it says Jesus wept. So if he could have a bad day, I think I can too. But I try to do it. Now, I fight it sometimes by myself. Now, my son will tell you that I have some down days because, you know, he's my son, so he becomes my whipping boy. But I try to keep them fewer and far further between, you know, as life goes on.
When you were coaching and you lost a game, how did you lead those men the following Monday?
That's the most difficult thing. The most difficult thing is after you play a Sunday game and you go home to your family, and they know that they always knew that they didn't speak until I spoke. And because, you know, your mind's going 100 miles an hour trying to think what happened in the ball game, whether you won or lost. But then on Monday, you looked at the film, and then the players would come in. And what you have to do, which I think helps you in life, you have to put that game out after you watch it. You have to say, that game's over with. We can't do anything about it. We got to go into the next one. And that's what's great about coaching, is that when you have a bad day or a bad game, you got another week to face up and see if you can improve. So that always gets you through, and I think it gets you through as a business person. You lose a thing, you have a business deal, you lose something, but you know what? You know there's tomorrow.
I joke with you about how well you dress, even at Costco, but why do you dress? You're always impeccable in how you dress.
Well, I'm not so sure it's impeccable, but thank you. But I just, Paul Brown, again, always said, if you dress casual, you think casual. And so he said, you never know who you're going to meet that you might impress, and it's going to make a good impression. And it's not that I'm trying to impress people by the way I dress, but you never know when people call you into a meeting and some guy says, oh my gosh, I got to get a tie, I got to get this. I say, you try to be ready at all times for what can present itself, because, you know, opportunity presents itself many times at the inopportune times. And so I've just always been, of course, my dad being a tailor didn't hurt. He taught us that too. So
you have self-deprecating humor that's very effective for you. Can somebody learn that?
Well, I guess you have to be as unsuccessful as I've been at times. You know, doesn't have to. You don't want to learn it that way, you know. But you know, you take Lou Holtz, who's been very, very successful. Man, he just downgrades himself about that lisp and everything, you know. And by the way, Lou makes about $35,000 a speech now. And when he was my assistant, he has that lisp, and he didn't want us to go out and speak because he was embarrassed by that lisp. And I always kid him. I say, "Daggone it, Lou, you're out there and you haven't shared one cent with me." But it's great to see guys like Lou and those people be successful. I'm thrilled for them.
What role has faith played in your life?
Oh, big role. Very much so, because when I was blinded in my right eye partially, I was down, and my beliefs and my parents stressing that helped me. And then when I would change jobs, and when I didn't get jobs, because, you know, I was a basketball coach also for 10 years in high school and college. And when I didn't get a couple jobs that I thought I'd get, you know, you get down and you just say, "Hey, you know, I can't, this way, this is what God has this in store, something else for me." And you know what? That old saying, you know, when one door closes, the other one opens. And God has certainly given me more than I deserve and opened up a lot of doors for me.
You're 78. You have a very young heart. And you really, everybody you meet, you truly care about them. How do you do that?
Well, that's not hard, because, again, that's something I was taught, that you're put on this earth to do some good for others. And to me, the fun of life is doing something for somebody that's ill, somebody that's in need, letting somebody out of a driveway, which is a difficult thing today. You know, they don't let you out. Those things, to me, it's consideration for others, and then it's just you care for them without trying. It just comes natural. And there's so much hate in this world, as I see, that it's all brought on again, though. But if the parents teach somebody, their children, to care for each other and care for others, you got something going.
You and your wife, Betty, have been very involved in many local non-for-profits, from St. Joe's Hospital in Pontiac, on and on and on and on. Why, Rick?
Again, I just feel you've got to pay back for what you've been given. And St. Joseph Mercy Hospital, we've been involved with it since 1973, believe it or not. And the people up there are great. We have great doctors there. Jack Weiner, we got a great leader. I mean, it's a hospital, and that's what's great. I admire doctors. They're the ones that have the great life, because they are healing people. And to me, that's more important than coaching or anything else. And so to me, being involved with a hospital is I'm the one that benefits from it, to be honest with you.
Last question. What advice would you give our young people tonight?
I'd say, number one, respect your family, your parents. Say I love you to them so many times, because let me tell you, my mother and dad died, and to this day, I would give anything to tell them one more time, I love you. And to me, you got to say that and mean it. And when you have that in your heart, that you have love for your family, you're way ahead of the game.
It's been an honor to have you. It's been an honor to be able to call you friend for many years. All the help you've given me, and all the help you've given thousands of people in this community. Thanks.
Thank you, Jack. You're special.
Our guest next Sunday will be the professional athlete who gave his alma mater, MSU, $2.5 million in his mom's name. This is the most any professional athlete in any sport ever has donated to his alma mater. His name, Steve Smith. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great 2007, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.